Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I've brought along my special friend.
Who's that?
I figure one of these days you're not going to answer. He's here.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Good evening, Richard.
And a happy solstice to all of you. May you be experiencing the beautiful energies of this solstice, and may they bring forth positive, wonderful changes in your life.
Amen to that. We all want positive changes in our life. And we have an exciting show tonight. I think it's exciting. Our guest tonight is Rose Villard. And for those of you who listened to our show last week, you're well aware of the fact that we brought in an individual who was connected with the Monuments Men. And we just love the Monuments Men because it's one of those few things that happened during wartime that was unselfish. And they collected a tremendous amount of art that was stolen by the Germans, and they returned it to the people that it belonged to. They did not try and keep it. And so it's one of those unselfish acts during wartime that I have just been so intrigued with. And last week we brought in one of the Monuments Men that had crossed over, and Rose Villard was associated with that particular group, and she wanted to be on the show this week. So she came to me and asked if she could be on the show. So that does happen sometimes, not a lot, but it does. And so I was really enthusiastic about the fact that she had come, wants to be on the show, and I'm really curious about her message. So in case you are not familiar with the work that Richard and I do, if you have any concept of what she looks like, she is a lady that wore glasses all the time. And if you know the one that I'm speaking of, see her in your third eye and pay attention to your heart chakra, and you might pick up the energies of Rose Villard that Richard is describing. So, Richard, I'm going to turn it over to you, and hopefully you can call in Rose, and she is there, and you can tell us what her energies feel like.
Yes, how I experience her is this beautiful, gentle, feminine energy, strong, loving. I experience her a little left of center. But this really feminine energy, you know, it's almost like I can smell her perfume. It's quite extraordinary.
I love it. Well, she did talk about how the French women love French perfume.
So, really, a really fine energy is how I would describe it. Very clean and clear energy, yet very, very fine. It has ethereal qualities, but also strength. It's very interesting energy, almost quite a vitality to it. Her energy belies the photographs of her as almost this little unassuming, mousy individual. It's much more consistent with how she behaved, I have to say. Very interesting.
And she has a message for us, Richard?
I hope so.
I do too.
Let's see what she has to say. I asked to come forth on your wonderful radio show because I became aware of your interest in the work that was done in that time to save so much European art and return it to its rightful owners where that was possible, to return it to the galleries it had been in and to the individuals who had owned it, though that was not always possible to do. And this process of returning the artworks at the end of World War II was a role of great passion for me. I was extremely angry to see what the Germans were doing with French art in particular, though I assumed it was happening elsewhere. And I was in a position to record what flowed through the Jeu de Paume, which is where I worked, and as it happened, it became what you might consider a clearinghouse of sorts for the artworks that were stolen by the Germans. And they had no knowledge that I spoke German quite fluently and was able to completely understand everything that they said and indeed read everything that they wrote where it came under my watchful gaze. And I secretly documented all of these works of art, the original owners where that was possible, and the information that as to where this art was being sent. And some of that information came from very loyal and committed shippers and drivers and so on who had a role in moving the art to the trains that carried it to Germany. And so I was able to document all of this traffic. I had a great interest in art, and it had been a passion of my life. And I was, you might consider, something of a curator in the Jeu de Paume, though this was not really acknowledged at the time. But truly, I had a great deal of knowledge about art in general and the specific artworks in the Jeu de Paume and the great painters. And so I was able to recognize many of the works of art that came through the Jeu de Paume without having to do further research, because I had already studied these artworks in great detail as I went through my studies. So, in a way, I was in a unique position. And it is clear in hindsight that I could have ignored this. But it just was not in my makeup. It was not even something that I considered. I was so incensed by the actions of the Germans in eliminating this art from its rightful possessors and its flagrant transfer to the homes of particular individuals or to particular locations for later transfer to Hitler's planned art museum in his hometown. I truly was incensed by these actions, and I was extremely angry about their behavior. And so, for me, it was not really a choice. I was already a careful documenter of things, and so it really was a very simple step for me to track these artworks, and indeed, where possible, to place a small mark on them so they could be traced in the future. And truly, I had no idea how events would unfold in the war and whether indeed the work that I was doing would ever be of any value. And having documented all of this, the next issue was, who could I trust with this information? Who would act in a manner, if anyone, to actually, upon locating these artworks, to actually return them to their rightful owners. As I did this work, I had no idea that anyone would ever step forward to act in this manner. And indeed, it took me some time to trust the American who came forth to connect with me and to indicate to me that these works of art would be returned, where possible, to their rightful owners. And so I documented all of this, and I was very pleased to be able to be satisfied that the efforts of the, what you might consider, Western allies to band together some key individuals interested in art who had a history in artworks, who would undertake this return work. As you may know, the Russians did not act in this manner, but rather sought to, you might say, continue down the path that the Germans began. And perhaps you can understand their stance, given that their artworks were flagrantly stolen also by the Germans, and they had so much of their wealth stolen during the Russian Revolution, which most people do not understand. And so one could perhaps understand their stance, though I did not agree with it. And so it was a great joy to see this group of people gather. The movie The Monuments Men focuses primarily on Americans and one British individual and one French individual. But indeed, there were a great many individuals from many countries involved. Some 350-odd individuals were involved in that project. Again, there were indeed quite a number of Americans and British, but of course, French, Belgian, Dutch, and indeed some Germans became involved as events unfolded. So it was truly a wondrous project to be able to work with these individuals and to see the work that I had undertaken so painstakingly be able to be used in a manner that I feel contributed quite significantly to the effort to firstly locate these artworks and secondly to return them to their rightful owners. And so I was very proud of this work. I do not seek acknowledgement in any way by coming forth to share this story, and there was quite a deal of recognition by a number of people, though not so much within France itself, as to the work that I undertook and its role. There's been more recognition of this posthumously in France since I passed over. But I wanted to share this story because many people in different ways find themselves in a position not unlike mine, where they have a lot of knowledge and understanding, and they see things that are being, you might say, mishandled, or people are being mistreated, their key assets are being stolen flagrantly, and they could make effort to track some of this if they chose. And I encourage all of you to be mindful of the true owners of artworks and other treasures, you might say, as events unfold in your world, because you are entering a period where there will be a great deal of disruption. and the opportunities will arise once more for quite widespread looting as the, you might say, wheels fall off the world that you know, because this indeed will happen, and it will happen quite soon if my understandings are accurate. And there will be opportunities for key individuals to do as I did, not knowing if there will be an opportunity for the work that you undertake to be able to contribute to the return of some of these items to the individuals who rightfully own them. But as in my case, you need to act based on what you feel is right. You never know how this will unfold. Not everybody is in the kind of position that I was in. It took key knowledge. And of course, I happened to be what you might consider in the right place at the right time. As I said, I spoke fluent German, though the Germans did not know this. And I had a great deal of depth of knowledge about the artworks. But I also had a passion about what was the right thing to do. And it was acting on all of these pieces coming together. I had no idea, for example, that the Jeu de Paume would be used as this clearinghouse, you might say, as these artworks were gathered and, you might say, distributed out to the various places in Germany to which they headed. But these opportunities will arise for others, and you must act, in my view, upon what you feel is right. That is what integrity is. That is what honor is. That is what self-worth is about. It is these elements. It is not as if truly you are acting because you know there will be an outcome. It is simply the right thing to do. I could have ignored all of this, but it was not in my nature to do so. And it so happened, as I said, that there was this group of individuals who were able to take my information and to apply it in the exact manner that I envisioned when I documented all of this artwork. So I wanted to share this story with you because it has relevance to your time on several levels. As I say, I doubt that those who will be looting will ever listen to this recording. But perhaps some who might be in a position with the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, and integrity, and honor, and self-respect to track these things to the best of their ability. Perhaps there will be some of those people who will hear this recording. And I encourage you in your own way, in your own form, to record these things, because you just do not know how events will unfold. The recording of these things can be very useful in the future as things change. So this is my message to you, my friends, and I thank you for the opportunity to be able to come forth and share these thoughts with you.
Thank you, Rose. From your perspective, can you give us some sort of an idea as to what might happen in the world that will cause disruptions where there will be looting?
You are perhaps aware that the world's financial system is on a knife edge. The threads are in place that are even more powerful, more disruptive than those that were in place before what is known as the global financial crisis of 2008. The forces that were at work then are even more powerfully at work now. And so the difference between now and then is that that so-called crisis of 2008 was used to drain the coffers of governments, as if the flagrant abuses of the banks was the responsibility of governments. Of course it was not. But nevertheless, governments acted on the basis of those that control the world and transferred, you might say, bailout funds to the various banks across the globe. And of course, this has contributed to the very difficult circumstances that you find in Greece and Spain and Portugal, for example. And the next phase of these activities, when it unfolds, will of course be to confiscate the funds held in the banks as deposits by creditors. There are already laws in place in most countries, and actions have already been taken down this path. In Cyprus, for example, where 10% of the funds held in the banks above a certain amount were confiscated to bail out some of the banks in Cyprus. So you need to understand that what this means is that there will be a disappearance of available funds. And if you reflect upon this, if you don't have any credit or cash, then it's difficult to buy food or gas or whatever it is that you need to be able to live in this current world. And so you can imagine how disruptive this is going to be. And I foresee that this will all unfold in a not-too-distant future. The plans for those who organize these things is that they bring in a new global electronic currency and act as they do, act like they are the global saviors when they are in fact pulling back further available freedoms and privileges as a result of these processes. But it will not unfold as they plan, because there are other events that are unfolding in parallel. And that is the emergence of the new consciousness that humanity, those who are prepared to do so, will, you might say, step into and be, in a sense, shielded from all of this. So it is my awareness of those pending changes that causes me to use the words I use.
Thank you, Rose. Of course, people who are in debt would be, shall we say, doubly burdened. Is there enough time for people to pay down debt as part of the preparation for these events?
For the most part, those people who are in debt live a lifestyle that has them remain in debt. It is unlikely that many people will pay down much in the way of debt. And truly, it is not that important in the scheme of things, because the real issue at stake here is the emergence of the new consciousness and the opportunity to participate in those changes for those who select it. And those who have not placed themselves in a position where they may participate in that shift will live out their lives in this difficult consciousness. And it will be a very difficult environment indeed.
Do you have a sense of how close this new consciousness might be?
It is my view that you will see the triggers emerge in your world in the coming weeks. That is my assessment of things, based on my ability to observe it.
Oh my goodness, in the coming weeks, are you free to discuss what some of the triggers might be?
The key trigger is the emergence of the rejuvenation of the human physical form, the return to the capabilities and the abilities of the human form as they existed before what you call the fall in Atlantis. It is this step that will act as the trigger.
That's amazing. And so you see that in the near future?
I do indeed see this in the near future. Indeed, it is perhaps an interesting piece of synchronicity that I should be coming forth to speak with you at the time of this solstice, because I have been observing the build-up of energies on the planet, and whilst individuals can feel the energies of the various gateways as these energies have been built up, it is unlikely that individuals will observe the degree of change that has been, you might say, caused in the human physical form as a result of these energies coming forth, whereas it is very easy to observe those changes from my current dimension. And so I do see this June solstice of 2014 as a key trigger in this time of change. And so
that's quite a...
That is why I say I see this emerging in the coming week.
That's quite amazing, Rose. Thank you. And I invite our listeners who might have a question for Rose to call in and ask it, because she has brought forth some very interesting information that should, you might say, turn up some questions in your mind or comments. So we await that connection from our listeners. Richard, is there anything that you wish to ask Rose?
One question I have is, were there other individuals elsewhere who undertook similar documentation to the kind of work that she did?
It's a good question.
There were others who sought to track some of these things, but there was no one else who really was in a, what you might say, a clearinghouse location in the way that I was, that held the knowledge and understanding as well as the command of German that I carried to be able to do the kind of comprehensive documenting that I undertook. So there were certainly other willing individuals, but their ability to contribute was quite limited, in fact.
Rose, it seems beneath all of this that you had a great love for art. What turned you in that direction where you express this great love for art?
It is something that perhaps I was born with. I remember as a young child being interested in art, and indeed literature also. But as I progressed, I became more and more interested in the wonderful artworks of particularly the European artists, the great painters, the great sculptors. They fascinated me with the quality, the emotions that they were able to express through their artwork. And so I studied these works with great interest, in a sense, to try and understand exactly what they were trying to convey through their art, and also to grasp the emotions that were triggered by that artwork. And I was able to witness many people coming to the Jeu de Paume and to the Louvre also, and to see their reactions to the great works of art. And so I came to understand, firstly, the value of public galleries, of which the Louvre is but one example, because there were, of course, many such galleries across Europe and indeed elsewhere. And providing the opportunity for the public to come and experience these artworks, albeit in a limited manner, is of such great value because they transport the individual from beyond the limits of their daily lives. They connect with him on a level which is outside of that day-to-day experience, and if they are open to it, transports them to a different experience of themselves. And I was able to witness this on many occasions. And so when I saw these artworks being transported, you might say, being stolen by the Germans, I was extremely irate about it. And this was part of what drove me, this mixture of the love of the art itself, the impact that it had upon me, and more particularly the impact it had on individuals who are able to have access to it. And of course, where those artworks were owned by individuals, they had the right to continue to experience those works of art that they had been able to procure in whatever manner, whether they were handed down through family or they were fortunate enough to have the wherewithal to purchase those works of art. And so you might say, as I look at my life, it's almost as if I chose a path through life to be able to fulfill that role. Because as I look at my life, I had the knowledge, the understanding, the passion, and the opportunity, given that I was in the Jeu de Paume, where this art was flowing through. One doesn't recognize, for the most part, as you live your life, how much things are planned, but I have come to recognize that I had chosen a path that would put me in a place to do this work. And it took me some time to appreciate this truth, but I now recognize it.
Rose, I believe that wholeheartedly, that we choose a path and bring to that path the elements that make that mission possible. And I like the concept that you expressed as to how art brings forth certain emotions. And I think this is very important, too. So thank you for that insight. Right now, we don't have any of our listeners calling in with questions. So tell me how a person might go about trying to appreciate art in a better method. Would the best thing be to go to the art museums to start there?
There are many threads to this. There is certainly value in reading books on the artists and their work and their focus. And these help to give you a perspective of the artists and their work. But truly, there is nothing quite like the experience of standing in front of these works of art. No photograph, no print in a book can ever express what these works of art carry. So yes, I primarily encourage you to take the opportunity, if you have, to visit as many of the public galleries as you can to experience a series of works by an individual artist, because in doing that you begin to get a sense of the energy of their work, of the flavor of their work, of the focus of their work. It is in this manner that you build an appreciation, you build an understanding, you build an affinity for the great works of art of the world. For example, if you are drawn to visit Michelangelo's David in Florence, I also encourage you to examine some of the other work by Michelangelo, which is also in Florence, but indeed in other locations in the world where there are great examples of his sculpture. Similarly, if you are interested in sculpture and you wish to understand the work of Michelangelo a little more, there is great value, for example, in also visiting the Rodin Museum in Paris, because you see there a great collection of art from another sculptor of a different period and of a different style, but you gain an understanding, a greater appreciation, in my view, for both artists by examining the work from different individuals. So, in a way, it is like a project of sorts to build that kind of picture. Take the time to visit as many galleries as you can to build a picture of the work of an artist. If one looks at Picasso, for example, there are a number of works of his which are very world famous. But to understand Picasso well, in my view, you need to visit the Picasso Museum in Spain. Can't think of the name of the city. And you will see there work that he did as a young child. And you appreciate the extraordinary gifts that that man had. It is easy to be dismissive of his truly great skills. Indeed, he was quoted as saying that as a child he could draw like Raphael, and he spent his lifetime trying to rediscover how to paint as a child. It might seem like a bizarre thing, but unless you understand a man's true skills and abilities, you truly cannot appreciate the true depth and complexity of his work. He was one of the very few artists who painted in different, you might say, forms, different styles concurrently. There are artists who go through various periods of progression, you might say, from one to another, but there have been very few artists who have actually painted in quite different styles concurrently, and Picasso was one of those. Again, you can only appreciate these things if you take the time to visit the galleries and connect with these wonderful, wonderful works of art. They carry a vitality, a life, an energy, a consciousness even, that unless you experience them firsthand, you truly cannot appreciate it. So I encourage you to make those connections if you are able and if you are drawn to. This is, in my view, the way to appreciate art in general, to build that broader perspective, to understand where, you might say, an artist fits in the scheme of things, the period that they were painting in, what kind of painting was being done by their colleagues at the same time, how their works differed in style and approach and expression. It's a picture that you can build simply by spending time in the wondrous galleries of the world.
That's beautiful. Thank you for the advice. I was thinking in particular of Monet. Monet certainly is a gift from the French people to the world. And I love his work. And I've seen his work up close in some museums. And it really is amazing how the lines put on the paper or the canvas look so different when you step back. That's quite remarkable, I think.
Monet was a true master. He mastered the expression of light. It was his great passion. And he found ways to work with, you might say, large chunks of paint to build a textural basis. And yet, it's an image which only works, as you say, when you stand back from it, when the pieces come together and the eye integrates what he has placed on the canvas. Truly an extraordinary man.
Really. And we do have a call now. Helen on line 3 has a question. Helen, what is your question, dear?
Yes, thank you. My question is associated with the fingers of consciousness and connection with the soul monad. How can one person react to their physical abilities, like by the way connecting with the soul monad?
Richard, do you understand the question?
I'm not sure it's that relevant to Rose. Could you ask it again, Helen? I'm not exactly getting what you're saying.
I'm sorry. Like, for example, I'm always fascinated by being able to speak French, but this lifetime, I have nothing to do with it. And also, I, like most of people, have this full appreciation for art, literature. And obviously, in this physical world, we cannot do it all or many things. And so I have this fantasy at a certain point or by which way connecting with the soul monad, because it stores all your life experiences, fingers of consciousness, and the physical abilities with it. So is there any way by just connecting with the soul monad it can have more physical ability activated or become reality?
I understand your question. As the changes come forth, Helen, as the new consciousness emerges, you will be able to connect more readily with your soul monad and indeed the other fingers of consciousness that continue to journey, that are what you might consider your past life. And so you can tap into their wisdom and their understanding. But you live a life, and it is important that you focus on the key things that you wish to undertake in your life. Every individual is faced with a plethora of choice, and you need to decide what's important in your life. You can't treat life like a smorgasbord where you try to eat everything on the table. It doesn't work like that. You need to decide what is important in your life and focus upon it. That does not mean that you cannot have a broad array of interests, but if you want to understand French, it's not that difficult to learn. I'm drawn to share with you the experience of Susan Lindau that I had an interview with last Sunday. And Susan shared with me that what the first words that she spoke were indeed German, even though she was raised in America, and her mother connected her with a woman who was German speaking, who was an academic, and she said that Susan was sharing a a folk tale, a German folk story, but not in the currently written version, indeed in the original version of the folk story, which of course she had no opportunity to learn as a two-year-old, I guess she was. But she was recounting this folk story from a past life. So you can connect with past lives and bring these things forth, perhaps more readily in the new consciousness.
Yeah, that is fascinating, Richard. Thank you.
Yeah.
Elio is online too. Welcome, Elio. What is your question?
Yes. Hi. Thank you, Caroline. Thank you, Richard. I'm struggling with a question with this, all of this art. And the question is, I understand trying to stop the German from stealing the art that was really belonged to somebody else. But when the art belonged to people like the Rothschild, who had really bought it based on stolen money, which one makes sense? I'm struggling with this question, if I may.
Of course, I now understand who the Rothschilds are and the role that they played in the world. But truly, very little of the art that we were discussing was held by the Rothschild. And it is a difficult situation, as you say, to deal with those things. But ultimately, when you were in a place like I was, the focus is really a much broader one than just those individuals, and the purpose was a much broader purpose. My primary focus was the public art first and the private art second. And there were many, many individuals who had lost their private art collections through this process. And yes, in the public perspective, some of the art belonged to the Rothschilds, but you have to understand that it was a very carefully staged involvement. They were very well protected throughout the war, as you might understand, given their role behind the scenes. So I understand your dilemma, you might say, but for me, there was no dilemma. My approach was a much broader one. It was a principle, you might say. The issue of the basis upon which the Rothschilds had acquired their art was really not my concern. And as I say, the numbers of works of art that were involved that belonged to them was relatively small.
We're getting to the end of the show, and I'd like to thank Rose and those who have called in, and for all of your wonderful information. And Rose in particular, what is on the horizon is of great interest to us, and I'm glad that you touched on that to give us some insight as to what would be happening, and as you say, soon. So thank you so much. We do appreciate that. And Richard, I wanted to speak to you personally. Give us a little insight as to the video that we have done for the Templars. Your impression of it.
My impression of it?
Sure.
Well, in ways my impression of it is on a number of levels. Firstly, there is the information that the Templars gave Carolyn and I back in 2010 and 2011. And it might be hard for you to imagine this, but we really, just as I do on these radio shows, I have no idea what information is going to be given to me by, for example, Rose as this call proceeds. I have no clue what she's going to tell me. And it was exactly the same with that material that Carolyn and I brought forth from the Templars. We would start a recording and we had no clue what they were going to share with us, but it just unfolded. They had a plan and it unfolded step by step by step. So there is a wonder, in a way, of really the quite extraordinary content that they shared with us on so many subjects. The second level is in terms of the overall end result, the packaging, if you will, the final product. And I'm really very pleased and thankful for the wonderful work that Adam did to package those up in the video form that he has done, which makes the messages, in my view, much more accessible than just listening to the audio itself. But the other thing that's begun to interest me is how quite a number of people that have listened to those recordings now, or watched them and listened to them, have found them triggering experiences for them, triggering experiences either of being Templars or indeed finding the material to be very powerful from a meditative perspective, to, you might say, open, you could say, spiritual doorways. And also individuals who have taken the material that we have provided, the printed material that I give you access to when you order the disc, to work with the various cathedrals with each of the chakras and to experience some quite extraordinary unfoldings as a result of that work. So all of that is, for me, very exciting and humbling to see that this material carries a power, you might say, that is beyond really, in a sense, what we appreciated, expected, or understood when we took those messages. So I find the whole thing to be very exciting and humbling.
Thank you, Richard. Something that I would like to mention is that when the glass in the cathedrals was made, that the originators literally took precious gems and ground them up and put them in the glass itself. They took emeralds and sapphires. I'm trying to think what the other
gemstone.
And the ruby. They crushed it, put it into the glass, and when the sunlight comes through that glass, those gemstones have a bearing on the physical body. I was traveling with a group of individuals, and we were in a church where the windows were very low in the building so that you could stand in front of the window and the sun would come through the glass, and there was a lot of blue in the glass. And what I saw surrounding this woman was all of this blue light. It was being reflected through her body from the glass itself in the cathedral. To me, that was, you might say, proof of what was happening. I knew something was happening to her physical body for the blue color to come forth through that glass through her body. I'm not quite sure what was involved with that, what process was going on in her body, but I knew something was going on.
Very interesting. I see we have Charlie on line 3. Carolyn, it might be a bit late.
Oh, okay.
Did you want to
bring
that thought?
Charlie, do you have a question?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to check back with Rose on her comment about sort of the big shift that will be happening within the next couple of weeks, and whether or not she had any recommendations as what I could do or individuals could do to prepare for this upcoming shift, like something as easy as maybe should we prepare to have cash on hand, or should we just, you know, sort of let it go and let it unfold and just trust, or what would her advice be on how we should be handling the next little period of time?
Excellent question. Richard, are you able to connect with Rose?
Yes. Firstly, I did not say the next couple of weeks. I said the next few weeks. So we're talking perhaps a little longer than 2 weeks, but maybe if one consider the next 8 weeks as being a very important time in your world. And in my view, it would be very helpful if you are able to put some cash aside, because cash will continue to be a tool that you can use for a period of time, and this will help you pass through this period. It will also be of value if you are able to have some precious metal coin, gold and silver coin. Silver is perhaps more useful than gold because they are smaller denomination coins, you might say. So this might also be helpful. But ultimately, the key focus is on stepping forward. You are one of those who will participate in the shift, and so changes will come forth that will see you protected. It is a little hard to envision this from where you sit, but in a way, it will be as if there are two worlds existing side by side. And in a sense, that is how it will be. So be at peace, do what you feel is appropriate to do, and trust in the processes of life. Do not be panicked by events as they unfold. But be at peace and take care of yourself to the best of your ability.
Thank you.
Thank you. Richard, we're at the end of the show. Did you have any last minute thing to talk about for the next couple minutes?
Not really. I think just to thank Rose and to thank you, Carolyn, for your contribution to making this show work. It's these are fascinating things that we do. I must say I learn a lot from them, and I'm humbled to be able to bring this material forth in this way, and I hope people get value from it.
While we're talking about that, Richard, I would like to mention that Richard teaches this. He teaches people to speak to those on the other side, and he does an excellent job of it. Richard, for those who might be interested in this kind of work, where should a person go to get some more information?
Yes, go to rightbrainmagic.com.
And for people who may be interested in the Templar information, where could they go to order a recording?
It's True Stories of the Templar Knights with dashes between each of the words.
Well, that seems easy enough.
With a .com on the end.
Well, yeah. We have 2 minutes.
Well, we probably need to wrap up, I think. We normally quite go up to the hour. So.
Indeed. And I look forward to coming into your awareness next week. And until then, good night for now, everyone. Thanking Rose and you, Richard.
Thank you, Carolyn. Good night for now.